Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you may be. Welcome to episode 9 of This Week in the Hawks. My name is Graham, of course, and holy crap, do I sound great. I finally got myself a decent audio setup. But hey, hopefully it pays off. But look, wow, Edesh. Yes, very quick, very briefly, post-recording Edesh. I want to just quickly apologize if there's any audio discrepancies throughout this. This is all a little bit new to me, this setup, so forgive me as I figure out the kinks just a little bit. You might hear a few clicking here and there, so oops, and I'll know better for next time. Today is Friday the 17th. We are, of course, finally at the All-Star break, and that's great news. But just a quick cool story before we kick things off today. For those who don't know, I live in Ireland. I live in a very small village. I'd be amazed if there are over 1,000 people living in this place. And I was just lying in bed. It was around 9:30 or so, and I hear an emergency vehicle rush past my house. I live on my own here in this town, and I thought nothing of it as such. I thought, okay, cool, that's whatever, hopefully everything's okay. I actually had plans to head out later that morning. My dad came, picked me up, and we had to pop down to my mom's house, which is also in the same town. I had to pick up an envelope she left in the post box. So we're going down past the river, turn into the estate, and we see all the emergency vehicles outside. There's a fire engine and some Garda cars. Gardaí, if you weren't familiar, is just what we call our police here. It's just the guards. So we pop down for that, and we see that the fire is at the fuse box. And straight away, my dad thought, okay, that could be a grow house. I would have been very shocked, because, you know, my mom knows the guy who lives in the house, and you know, they get on, and so I dismiss that. No, it couldn't be. So anyway, picked up the envelope, went out. We had our suspicions, but we didn't really think a whole lot else of it. And then later in the day, I'm talking about 3 o'clock or so, maybe half three, we popped back. We took a wrong turn because my dad forgot where I lived. I didn't live in the family home anymore, but he said, we may as well just go past anyways. And I was considering letting the dog in anyways, because she had been out all day. So we drive past it again, as we go around the bend towards my house. We stopped outside my parents, my mom's house. We both kind of took a sniff of the air, looked at each other, and at the exact same time, we were like, that smells like weed. So, and it was so strong. It was unbelievable how strong the smell of that was. And we thought, wow, there's no doubt, because all the windows were open and the such. So we went back out. There's a guard standing on at the house. And yeah, he kind of noticed that we'd been in there a few times in the day, and he just kind of asked what the story was. I told him that I lived down there, and my dad just asked a few questions, like a question is like, everything okay, and that kind of thing. And he said, the guard said, it's a good day for the guards. And you know, we kind of drove off after saying goodbye to him, and we were both amazed. And sure enough, the headline came through later that there was actually 200,000 worth of cannabis in the house, which was incredible, because that nothing ever happens in this town, even village even, and for something like that to break here was absolutely incredible. They probably wouldn't have found it if it were not for the fire that it caused, because supposedly, I don't know anything about the sort, but I'm told that to kind of grow that thing, you need a lot of electricity, because you have to create lighting and that kind of thing, blah 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 blah. So that's how it started. It was absolutely incredible. But hey, there's a quick cool story for you before we get started here. We are, of course, at the All-Star break. Hooray. I think everyone needs the break at this point. Literally everyone needs it. So, yay, we're here. The Hawks aren't in action again until next Friday. They play the Heat, I believe, is their first game back. But let's go over the quick bit of news from this week. And the big one coming through on Monday. Bud telling the media that Paul Millsap will not be dealt. I'm going to give a quote here. He's not going anywhere. You can write that. End quote. So print dash, you could say. It's Chris Vivlin-Warr, of course, reporting this. And I had the article up later on today. You can make a fairly safe assumption that this is pretty final, because Bud is, after all, the president of basketball operations. So I know Wes Wilcox is the GM, but look, Bud has final say at the end of the day over these things. And look, he's a man of his word, Bud. And Paul Millsap said the same thing. Quote, Bud has been a man of his word. He has always shot straight with me, always honest. I can take his word for what it is. It's refreshing. I can't read my own writing here. Refreshing to know that I'm not going anywhere and I'll be on this team until the end of the year. So I've kind of talked about this already. I have my beliefs about ownership stepping in here to kind of avoid a rebuild. The other reasons why Millsap wouldn't be dealt at this stage. Basketball reasons, of course, at this stage. The Hawks have kind of come too far to kind of go backwards dramatically as such. So, but they're also in contention for home court advantage, and you know, it just doesn't make sense at this point to trade him from that point of view. But again, I'm of the belief that with the new arena renovations and that kind of thing that the club need to finance for, and they're raising ticket prices for, that they need to keep Millsap to kind of keep the team competitive. But I guess we'll see how far that theory really goes if they sign Millsap to the big blockbuster extension that he'll want and deserve once he opts out as a free agent, or opts out of his player option and becomes a free agent at the end of this year. Not much to say else on that. Is that the right decision at this stage to not trade Millsap? It's hard to say. It really depends what way you're looking at it and what way you're approaching it. If from a basketball standpoint, no. But from a future assets kind of point of view and direction of the club, age, you can make an argument otherwise. But hey, that's neither here or there. For now, it doesn't really, because none of it matters now at this stage, because he's not being traded. At this stage, you could be shocked if he was traded after all this. But look, that's what the crack is with Millsap. Something else that popped out to me on Monday, CVIV, Chris Vivlin-Warr, the AJC, kind of tweeted that about Larry Sanders, and that the Hawks were not a team interested in acquiring him. I don't know why they kind of shut that down. Maybe you should give Sanders a 10-day or something. Maybe he's looking for more. I think the Hawks have the leverage to say, look, you've been out for a while, let's just start with a 10-day. I would like to see Larry Sanders give a shot here in Atlanta, just as a backup big off the bench, because the Hawks could definitely use another big, since Splitter has been out and Chris Humphries is your other big as well. Mike Scott hasn't really given anything this season for different reasons. So I would take the gamble on a Larry Sanders. But look, CVIV reporting that the Hawks aren't interested, so you can probably imagine that won't go any further. But why not? Maybe they should. Isn't it worth it? Wouldn't it be worth considering? But look, we'll have to see where Larry Sanders bounces back. I hope he can bounce back well, because I like the guy and I can appreciate his reasons for leaving. He left a lot of money on the table to go, I believe. So just get his life in order, really, and because I know he struggled with depression. There's a great video when he did announce his not retirement, but that he was stepping back. I think it's on the Players Tribune YouTube channel, if they have one. But I'd recommend checking it out. It's people that question why he left, but you know, give him the opportunity to explain himself, and he did so very well. I could really understand where he's coming from. Having kind of been through that kind of thing myself, not so much with the NBA and money, but you know, just that kind of area. Other news: this news actually broke during the Clippers game. Chris Vivlin-Warr again reporting the Hawks are actively looking to add ahead of the trade deadline. This is something I wasn't really expecting so much, because I thought the Hawks might be quiet enough, but maybe the with the Raptors kind of deciding to add Serge Ibaka to their squad may have prompted Bud to think, and then the front office to think maybe that we should be looking to add talent to our roster. And you can bet that it won't be acquired for Paul Millsap, but you're looking at some sort of kind of little piece that would involve a trade of a future asset, whether it be someone like Prince, Bembry perhaps, even Tim Hardaway Jr. if you're looking for a decent asset, and perhaps more so the picks, future picks that the Hawks have. They've got a couple available to them. They have of course their own picks. They have Minnesota's future first round pick 2018, that's lottery protected, and they have a few second round picks as well. I think one's coming from the Heat, I think another one could be coming from the Wizards. Actually, not 100% sure what picks that are owed to Atlanta. Let me check that really quick. Okay, so we actually have a 2017 second round pick from Brooklyn, a second round pick from Miami, like I thought, 2018 first from Minnesota, 2019 first from Cleveland, of course that came in the Kyle Korver trade, and a 2019 second round pick from Washington, with the only outgoing pick going to a second rounder going to San Antonio. That was, of course, given away in the splitter trade. So the Hawks do have quite a number of assets available to them. So the big question everyone's asking is, if they were looking to add, what should they get and who should they get? I think it's important with these things to kind of identify the need first. So let's start kind of with the point guard position. The Hawks have Dennis Schroeder and Malcolm Delaney. I do not think it's wise to add another point guard. A third point guard wouldn't really do anything for the playoffs, which is what you would kind of gear this kind of move toward, would be at the playoffs. And three point guards, you know, that's a thing that can work in the regular season, but once you get to the playoffs, you narrow down your rotation. So a third point guard wouldn't really do anything here. If you did go for a point guard, you're basically, in a sense, we're making Malcolm Delaney kind of redundant there. And I actually really like Malcolm Delaney's defense. I think he's been very surprising on that end, and he's been definitely a boost for the Hawks on the defensive end. Even if he doesn't always have the greatest shooting nights, he's a very good defender, I think. Well, then, yeah, I was going to backtrack off my very good, but you know, I think he is a good defender. So I wouldn't go from that aspect. I think in terms of shooting guard, I think the Hawks are well taken care of. They have Tim Hardaway Jr. technically, and Kent Bazemore technically as well. Even though both can play small forward, I would say their best position is shooting guard as such. So I think they're set there, whether Tim Hardaway Jr. Comes off the bench, or maybe they decide Bazemore should be the one coming off the bench. We'll have to see, but I think they're fine in that department. You look at small forward, they have Tapo Sefolosha, who is, of course, still recovering from that groin strain. He's missed the last 9 or 10 games now at this stage. Gee. You have Tim Hardaway Jr., you have Kent Bazemore to kind of slot in there, and you have the two rookies. But do you really want to be playing those rookies in the playoffs? And that's the question that kind of they need to ask themselves. And if you're going to say flat out no, maybe if you were looking to add talent, maybe a small forward would be something you might try and add. I wouldn't personally. I think there's greater needs as such than the small forward position, mainly because Bays and Hardaway Jr. can play small forward. They can also stick Schroeder or Delaney at the two guard. They roll out that two point guard lineup sometimes, so there are workarounds around that. They also have Mike Dunleavy. I know you've got Dunleavy, but sometimes he can be misfiring. Okay, I'll be honest, I actually forgot Dunleavy. So maybe they're okay for small forward, because Dunleavy can play power forward as well. But you look at power forward, maybe you might consider a power forward position that you might add to. Obviously, you've got Paul Millsap, an all-star. You've got behind him a collection of players. Like Chris Humphries can play power forward. Mike Muscala is probably better suited to play power forward. I don't like him so much at center at times, but I'd prefer him to play power forward. Maybe stick Millsap at five. So you could say maybe something there instead of Humphries. Maybe not. For me, the position they need to fill, I think, is a backup big. I would think, because I guess it depends how confident you are that splitter is actually going to come back. For me, I'm not confident at all that splitter will be able to get back and acclimate himself, kind of to game fitness kind of levels in time. Splitter was ruled out for 6 to 8 weeks back in November. 6-7 weeks pass. He hopped on the broadcast for one of the games, and he literally said he was days away. He was days away from returning. That was back in January, I believe. Now we're midway through February, and Bud last week said he wouldn't necessarily say he's getting closer. So I have no idea what's going on there. They've not really given a lot of detail on Splitter, but I would think that he isn't coming back, which would be my opinion. And if he does come back, it's going to take too long to kind of get him in to match fitness as such. So I would, and I don't like Muscala or Humphreys playing center. Well, I don't mind Muscala playing center at times, but I don't like the idea of Humphreys being the backup center or Muscala being your prime backup center. Again, I like Muscala as that kind of power forward kind of role, maybe behind Dwight and Millsap in those lineups. And of course, Mike Scott hasn't really given anything there, so I think Muscala can fit into that power forward role well enough. But I would look at a center personally, only because I don't believe Splitter's ability to come back. So now that you've kind of identified the need, well, at least what I believe is the need, who are the targets? And there's a decent few targets out there, I think, for the Hawks. I'm looking at Andrew Bogut as someone that I think would be great in Bud's system. Because I remember when he was on the Warriors last year, I was calling on, when Durant decided he was signing with Golden State, and all of a sudden they needed to move salary to bring him in, I was begging for the Hawks to kind of jump on the wagon and just give a second rounder for Bogut, to get Bogut in there. Because I really think you can run the offense through Bogut as well. That's the beautiful thing. They ran it through him in Golden State as well. So I would say Bogut, but the problem is he's a free agent at the end of the season, and I'm of the belief that you should not give up future assets for rentals unless you're in a win-win now situation, which maybe the Hawks see themselves as being in. But I would try and acquire Bogut, because I think he'll be available in buyout season, which I think the Hawks should look to make more of their moves, because they do have a roster spot opening up. I don't believe they'll sign Lamar Patterson for the rest of the season, unfortunately. So I think they should make moves in buyout season. I think Bogut could be available in buyout season. They'll just have to kind of be quick, the Hawks. But I think there's a great role for him. He's also a great, you could argue if he's a great screener or not. He certainly likes to push the limits. Andrew Bogut does. So I personally really like him. I would like the Hawks to kind of target him. Even if it's just a minute, like, I'm not, okay, first round picks, I don't like giving up. I honestly don't really care about second round picks personally. I know you give a few second round picks that kind of that do turn out great, your Draymond Greens, your Paul Millsaps, your Marc Gasols, but those are very rare. So I'd be more than okay for the Hawks to pair with a few second round picks. I think there's definitely value to be had when you pair a few second round picks together, because there are teams that just want to trade down into the second round because they just don't want to take the first round pick and that salary, that guaranteed salary. An example was last year for Boston. They had 4 first round picks last season, and they made a deal with the Grizzlies to trade down for 2 second round picks. So teams can flip those second round picks into a first rounder if they get clever enough with it. So maybe the Hawks should consider doing that. But again, I don't like the idea of parting with a whole bunch of second round picks for rentals. So there's one option. What about Nerlens Noel? I'm just putting these out there. Maybe, you know, just putting the idea out there, and maybe shoot it down myself before anyone else needs to. I like the idea of Nerlens Noel. The only issue I see here is what Philadelphia might want in return. You imagine they would want something somewhat decent. Would the Hawks be willing to give away a first round pick? Could you pawn off the salary of Splitter while you're at it? Maybe, who knows? Depends if, I don't know if what Philly's cap situation is, if they need to reach the floor or not. Because they actually spent money last season. So if they maybe need to reach the salary floor, you could definitely throw in Splitter and a second, maybe a first rounder, maybe 2 second rounders or something, maybe another young asset. It's hard to say what to give up. Problem is that Noel is a restricted free agent at the end of this season. Although if you traded for him, you would have the bird rights, but you know, it could also be ultimately being a rental. But I would like the idea of Nerlens Noel, a rim runner, such a shot blocker. I would like the idea of him as a backup big, but maybe too much to give away, I imagine, for the Sixers. And plus, if they want to trade Jahlil Okafor, they kind of have to keep Noel at this stage with kind of Embiid's injury problems there with the torn meniscus there in his knee. So they have to we have to be very careful with that. In terms of maybe a power forward, maybe what about Nikola Mirotic? There's a kind of a Mike Scott kind of player from last season, stretch four, can do a lot of nice things. I'm not sure about his defensive abilities there, but you know, maybe could be an idea for maybe a big that might stretch out the defense a little bit. I kind of like Mirotic, maybe not for the Hawks, but you know, that's just an idea. What about, here's one that I love, but I don't see how the Hawks could acquire him. I'm a big fan of Nikola Vucevic. Can we free Vooch from Orlando, please? Please, Atlanta, please. Someone free him. Just let them sit with Biombo at the center. Just get Vucevic. Okay, I'll be real. Unlikely to ever happen. I don't know what the Magic would want for a Vooch, but I just wanted to throw that in there because I love Vucevic so much. free him, damn it. I guess you could make a quick case. I just wanted to bring up a shooter that you might look to see even acquire, but his value has kind of skyrocketed of late, and that is of course former Hawk Lou Williams. I'm not sure what his free agent status is. I think he's a free agent next season. I think he signed a 3-year deal with the Lakers last year. I could be wrong, but again, you're probably looking at giving up a first-round pick at least for Lou Williams. And I wouldn't be totally opposed to giving up that Cleveland pick because it's pretty well protected. And it is in 2019. So, look, maybe not. But look, it's just an idea. None of these are really I would take seriously. They're just kind of ideas to kind of float around and for you to kind of sit with. The big one you could probably maybe take away from me as such that comes from me that I would actually be serious about is Andrew Bogut. But I do believe that the Hawks maybe should wait until buyout season to maybe see about acquiring Bogut. But of course the problem when you do that is everyone, well, like the playoff teams will be looking for Bogut because he'll sign for the veterans minimum essentially, and he'll have his own choice. So do you kind of believe in your ability to kind of woo a free agent like that with Bogut, or do you think he would pick somewhere else? Because why wouldn't he pick Cleveland in that sense if he had his own choice to sign with? Wouldn't that be exciting though, to see if we get the Cleveland and Golden State in the finals, to see Bogut going up against the Warriors? I think that would be fantastic, because I think ultimately the Warriors really, really, really hurt not having Bogut after he got injured in Game 5. I think it was Game 5. And he was great in the Olympics as well. So look, I'm a big Bogut fan. I would hope the Hawks can maybe make a move there. But again, maybe wait till buyout season. But you have to be aware that maybe, you know, Cleveland will be at play here. Because I believe they just cleared a roster spot as well by trading the Birdman. The poor Birdman. He's trying to be on these LeBron teams. And unfortunately, he's been the victim because he hasn't really been playing. So look, the deadline as such is on the 23rd. So before we kick back off again with games, I know some teams kick off on the 23rd. The Hawks do not. They kick off on the 24th, I believe, at Phillips Arena. So we could be looking at a few new faces or a new face or two when they get back going again. But look, it'll be very interesting to see what they do. But look, we'll have to see what happens. Let's get to some of the game talk, shall we? A couple of games from the Hawks this week. We'll very briefly start with last Friday's beginning to their 3-game road trip on the West Coast. They played the Sacramento Kings in Golden 1 Center, their first visit to Golden 1 Center. And it will be one to forget, I'm afraid, because they lost 108-107 the big thing here is that they blew a 22-point lead that they really shouldn't have. But unfortunately, do you ever have those lineups where it doesn't make sense how you could be outplayed? The Kings made their run with, because they basically found a lineup and kind of just stuck to it, basically changing out one player from the lineup to kind of go through, because they just found what worked. And the lineup was Darren Collison, Ben McLemore, Matt Barnes, Anthony Tolliver, former Hawk, number four, the second greatest number four in Atlanta Hawks history, Anthony Tolliver, not really. And between Willie Cauley-Stein and DeMarcus Cousins, who was in foul trouble, so that's why he was kind of out of the lineup for a little bit. That lineup really just made the run happen. The Hawks just couldn't match their intensity or anything, really. They couldn't defend very well. To be fair, McLemore and Tolliver did ignite from three-point range. Tolliver hit five. McLemore hit a career-high six threes. So they kind of caught fire there. The problem... And then, of course, some very questionable defense from Dennis Schroeder on Darren Collison for his game winner. But to be fair to Collison, once he got past Schroeder, he did a great job lifting the ball high off the glass to avoid Millsap, who was coming as the help defender there. And then drops in with, I think it was 3 point something seconds left. And then the Hawks run a play for Hardaway Jr. To drive toward the rim. He gets clattered a little bit. There was quite a reaction from the bench at the time, but Bud, looking at it live, didn't really freak out as much. But then post-game, very unusually, kind of said, that's a foul. He was not happy at all. And he said he would be expecting the last 2 minute report to kind of say, oh, sorry, it was a foul. But he didn't even get that, because they deemed that it was not a foul. So, and look, I find it difficult to kind of pinpoint where the contact that would have been a foul was from which player. And obviously the referees association, the last 2 minute report committee, I suppose is the what they're actually called, they couldn't really find much of a problem either. So no call, no foul, and of course they lose, the Hawks. And just after almost surrendering a 20-point lead against the Nuggets there on the Wednesday, just that frustration that they just can't close out these teams that they really should. Because the Kings, they have good players, but they're, you know, the Hawks should be winning this game. And they should have won this game. But look, some decent games for the Hawks here. Tim Hardaway Jr. scored 28 points, Millsap 25, and Dennis Schroeder 20. So kind of amazing, they had three players who scored 20 plus points. They still couldn't pull this victory out. The big thing that stood out for me was the bench. The bench really didn't help the Hawks here, unfortunately. They scored 16 points compared to the Kings' 32. Anthony Tolliver had 15 points on his own. They could have really given the Hawks starters a lift here. They had to do all the heavy lifting here. And unfortunately, again, part of that has to do with Tim Hardaway Jr. having to step into the starting lineup in place of Cephalosha. So you're losing that bench production as such. And you're losing whatever points Cephalosha is obviously going to be able to put out. Plus the defense in e-games as well. So you're gaining and saving points at the same time. But they could have really helped here. They didn't. Not the best Dwight Howard game in the world. 6 points, 11 rebounds. He ran into foul trouble with a very bad time. He fouled out there, I think, with a minute and something to go. And literally, plays he could have prevented happened. One of the more important baskets in this game was DeMarcus Cousins kind of powering through to the rim. If he's guarded by Dwight, maybe... Dwight can either block it or contest it. Either way, the first cousin shot missed, and then he has he's surrounded by like a whole bunch of small guys without Dwight Howard kind of there. And Muscala, I think the biggest guy in Muscala was behind him, and of course Cousins would have position, of course, by that stage. And he just boxes everyone out. He boxes him out and then everyone else. Well, maybe it might have been Millsap was behind him. But there was the big on the floor for the Hawks was behind him, which does no good. And of course, there's only small guys around Cousins. So he had an easy time just gathering the rebound and putting it in. If Dwight Howard is in this situation, maybe he gathers the rebound on the first attempt, or at least does a better job kind of contesting the shot on the second attempt. The other part for Dwight was that he got called for a tech there. Was it with 4 minutes left or something? Of course, the Kings made the free throw. Of course, and you look at any 1 point loss or whatever, you look back at these things. Oh, if Dwight hadn't got that tech, and you know, maybe you could argue he was aggrieved in a sense because he got hit in the face by Cousins. Nothing was called, so he's and look, he had a right to go. If that tech he was given for was him complaining about that no call, he has a fair point. But you have to be smarter in those situations within the game getting close as it was at that stage. But look, I don't want to spend too much time on this game. I guess the other thing from this game was the best thing from the Hawks side from this game was the two social media accounts for the Kings and the Hawks just taking the piss out of the no trolling rule. It was fantastic. Yeah, they just really made it look very stupid. So fair play to them. They Kings Twitter is actually really great. It was absolutely hilarious. They had something. Oh no, what was it? They played the Cavs, and they had like the. So they kind of took the piss out of LeBron's Cleveland. This is for you. And they had like an L. I think there was a gif of an L for a loss because they beat the Cavs. And they have so much sass for a team that's so many games under 500 and not in the playoffs at the moment. Maybe they are actually in the 80 at the moment, but they're so much sass for a team that doesn't below 500. But look, they do great. And I really enjoyed listening to Grant Napier and Jerry Reynolds on this game. It was actually funny listening to them when they were there because the Kings just played crap. They were crap in the first half, and they let them have it as well, Napier and Reynolds. And they're saying that, well, we've seen this team come back so many times because they have to do it so often because they're so bad at times. They dig themselves into these holes. Other thing I loved from this game, from the commentary side, very often do you get the home announcers glad that one of their players was given the technical foul. And Napier was glad that Matt Barnes was given the tech because he's like, he just needs to learn how to be quiet or learn to stop talking. He kind of stopped himself short of saying he just needs to shut up. But he was glad that Matt Barnes got a tech for constantly yapping at the refs. And look, I enjoy listening to those guys, and it was fun. It was good fun. Too bad the game wasn't as fun for the Hawks. Moving on to the Monday night game, the Blazers, the second game of the Hawks' road trip here. Hawks win it in OT, 109-104. Paul freaking Millsap. Oh my goodness. The Hawks actually finally executed out of in late game situation with the shot clock and game clock turned off. Not the game clock. Shot clock turned off. Game clock turned off would be a malfunction. Duh. but they actually executed a very crucial late game possession. And of course it ends with Paul Millsap hitting the buzzer beater with his left hand to send the game to overtime. And you thought, even though the Hawks haven't played great in this game, you know, they've got themselves to OT, and they've given themselves a chance. But of course the Blazers went on a very quick 7-0 run. Five of those points coming in within the first minute of overtime. And in the overtime, it really is about who punches first and who can get up first. Because once you're up, you really, in overtime, you really do have a great advantage over your opponent. But the Hawks didn't panic. They didn't call that panic timeout down 7. Came right back at the other end, scored. And literally ended the game on a 13-0 run. After the Blazers went up 7-104, the game was tied at 97 apiece heading into overtime. Of course, Blazers scored the first 7. Take them to 104. The Hawks, that was it for the Blazers scoring after that. The Hawks did end on a 13-0 run behind mostly free throws to kind of give him this win. Paul Millsap, you know, does what he did. I want to credit Tim Hardaway Jr. because he played some great defense just before overtime on CJ McCollum. Because if McCollum had hit that shot, this game's iced. It's a 4-point game and that's over. But Tim Hardaway Jr. kind of did a great job sitting in the stance. McCollum couldn't really shake him, and Hardaway Jr. ends up with a great contest. Hawks get the rebound, and they go down the other end. I think they call a timeout and they score. Of course, send it to overtime, and the rest is history from there. Anything do I have from this game? So look, and the win over in overtime for the Hawks moved them to 4-0 in overtime. They had lost 5 overtime games in the regular season last year, and then another one in the playoffs. So it's actually nice to see the Hawks kind of actually, even though they don't play great sometimes in these games, to actually take it to overtime, then to come through in overtime and win those games. You know, that's, you have to commend that team for that. Even if they don't, they should take care of business in regulation. They have done a good job of getting the job done in overtime. Something I really want to focus on is Dennis Schroeder, because his impact in this game was huge, because there was a point in the second quarter there where the Hawks could just get nothing going, and the Blazers, they're up by 13 by one stage, and the Hawks just looked terrible offensively, and Dennis Schroeder really just put the team on his back. He scored, I think it was a 14. He scored 14 of his 21, 14 of the Hawks' 21 points in the second quarter. Himself on his own shot 6 of 9 in the second quarter, while the rest of the team shot 1 of 11. That is insane, because, and again, he's a huge reason why the Hawks were kind of in this game, because without him, they would just, you know, it was just one, it would have turned into one of those games that would have, the Hawks would have been down like by 20 or 17 at the half. But with Schroeder, they really hung in there. And of course, Tim Hardaway Jr. had some stuff going on in the third quarter, and, you know, eventually the Hawks get this done in overtime. But without that run by Schroeder in the second quarter, they don't win this game. And to be fair, you could say that about a lot of little things in the game, but look, I really want to highlight that, because I don't think he got enough credit for that, his performance on that night. Free throws were big for the Hawks in this game. They shot 37 of 48 from the line. They got there a lot. Paul Millsap made all of his 12 free throws. I think Dwight hit 6 of 9. No, sorry, he hit 9 of 16. So a decent night for Dwight at the line there. Because at the end of the day, with Dwight, you get over 50%. You know, you're doing well. You're doing well with Dwight, and you get over 50% from the line. But the Blazers only scored 14 points from the free throw line. They shot 14 of 25. Not a great night for them at the line. Of course, that those things always cost you dear. But the Hawks just, even though the Hawks attempted 48 and only made 37, they still escorted the Blazers by 23 from the line. And this kind of helped offset one of the things the Blazers really killed the Hawks for, was rebounding. They came up with 66 total rebounds compared to the Hawks' 52. 22 offensive rebounds for 19 second chance points. And this wasn't even the thing with, Dwight's out of the game, Millsap at center, blah, 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 blah. Hawks struggled to rebound. Dwight played 38 minutes in this game. So he wasn't out for a whole lot of this game. So you can't really blame the Blazers' rebounding on Dwight not being in the game. He was in the game for a lot of this game, and they just rebounded regardless. So the good thing the Hawks had that free throw differential in their favor. Otherwise, they could have really... It was tough to watch the Blazers just get rebound after rebound after rebound. It was like going a trip down memory lane with this Hawks team. So that was kind of painful to watch. Another poor game for the bench, I thought. They scored 14 points compared to the Blazers 37, and it kind of led Bud to play a lot of his guys, his starters, a lot of minutes. Dennis Schroeder 42, Bazemore 37, Tim Hardaway Jr. 43, Millsap 41, Dwight 38. Torian Prince actually got to see some minutes off the bench. He got to see them by far the most minutes with 25. Of course, had a nice steal at the end of OT there, and had a big charge in overtime to help the Hawks get this win. But he is bad when you... So Prince actually led the bench in scoring with 5 points. 5 points. That's absolutely incredible. The bench was not good. And it almost cost the Hawks again here. At the trade deadline, if the Hawks wanted to target a bench scorer, I know you're kind of overreacting a little bit in the sense, because Hardaway is not on the bench in place, because he has to come in place of Cephalosha, but I wouldn't be totally opposed to the idea of adding some sort of bench scorer to come off the bench, just to help that bench production just go up a little bit, because when they don't have, when someone doesn't have it going, like you don't have your 10 points from Muscala or from Delaney or whatever, gosh, this bench really struggles. It really does, and it almost cost them again. So, yeah, there's one more thing from this game. We got our first Dwight Howard 3-point attempt, and it looked like a play that you know the Hawks had run in practice. There, you know, ball was moving around. I think in one sense, Dwight ends up in the corner, and I think the way Schroeder kind of no looked past it. I think he just knew that there was a teammate of his was there, but he didn't know which one. And maybe it's like kind of in 2K where you're kind of playing, you know, you're moving the ball around and you see a guy open and you kind of decide, okay, I'm shooting. You don't really know who it is, but you decide, I'm going to shoot this open shot, and no matter kind of who it is. And so you shoot it, and only then do you realize, oh crap, that's Kendrick Perkins taking a 3-pointer. This kind of reminded me of that a little bit. I don't think Dennis, I believe that Dennis didn't really know who it was in the corner. Turns out to be Dwight, and look, Dwight took it hit rim, to be fair. And Dwight hit a few threes, to be fair, in his career, but usually in late game situations when the game's already over and his team's winning. So he has this, yeah, I don't know. It hit rim, and that's really all you could say about it. And finally, moving on to the last game the Hawks played before the All-Star break, they finish up their 3-game Western Conference road trip at the Clippers. They actually didn't play. Usually the Hawks play the Clippers and Lakers back-to-back in Staples, but they went different this year. And, what a fun game this. I think everyone just checked out for this game early for the All-Star break. Hawks lose 84-99. To be fair, I'm going to be honest, I didn't watch this game. I caught the condensed highlights because I spent the day with my dad instead on Thursday, and good lord, I wasn't staying up until 6 o'clock to watch it the night before on the Wednesday, technically Thursday. And look, I didn't watch this game. Some things are just more important, but I have some of the stats here. The big thing that's standing out to me is the poor shooting from pretty much everyone. Dennis Schroeder kind of did okay with. Isn't it bad when you say a player did okay when he shot 5 of 15 from the field? Millsap shot 3 of 12. Bazemore shot 0 of 4, scored 2 points. Millsap scored 8 points there. Timmy was okay, 5 of 11, scored 11 points. Overall, the Hawks shot 30. They shot just over 40% from the field. The Clippers kind of. From what I saw from the condensed highlights, I did not see very good 3-point defense. The Clippers scored 14 of their 37 3-pointers, 37.8%. The other big thing I'm looking at here from the box score is the turnovers from the Hawks. And I saw some of the condensed highlights. There are some brutal ones at the end of the first half where the Hawks really were in a decent position heading into the half. But they turned it over a few times and the Clippers scored. They scored 22 points off of the turnovers, but really just put the Hawks down about the half. I think I saw Blake Griffin hit the. Oh, it was actually DeAndre got the buzzer beater dunk from the Griffin miss to go down. And if they had just taken care of the ball a little bit better at the end of the second half or the first half, second quarter, they may have had a better chance to kind of do something in the third quarter. But that really put them down as they were outscored 33-18 in the second quarter. And of course, the Clippers kind of just took things from there. They scored 29 points in the third compared to the Hawks' 24. Took that 24-point lead and Bud, I think, called game quite early here. We didn't really want to fight this one too long. And look, I can't blame them, to be fair. Everyone, I think they talked afterwards, everyone needs this break, you know. And, you know, I think that's true. This team can play a lot. It's sort of frustrating watching this team sometimes because they're somehow the 5 seed in touching distance of 3 and 4 seed, and the 2 seed is not far away either. They haven't played great of late. You know, they really haven't. You'll see that when we look at some of the stats from the last 5 games. And they're still right there. If this team can play so much better, and they're right there. They just need to get their heads together, pull the finger out, and just start games well. And once they get Cephalosha back, they'll play better defense and think things will pick up. But they just, it's frustrating because they have, you could see they could play so much better. I think Millsap knows this as well, because he's talked about it a lot, about, you know, he expects more from this team, and he should expect more, because no one was good really last night. Was there any other interesting things from this game that I have down here from the stats? 20 turnovers for the Hawks, like I mentioned, not ideal. I don't have much to say about this. But the Hawks do enter the All-Star break with a better record than they did last season. But it was kind of after the All-Star break where the Hawks really kind of embraced their defensive identity. They really put a great run together afterwards to get to 48 wins in the end. So even though the Hawks, with their 32-24 record, have a better record going into the All-Star break than they did last season, I don't feel confident knowing that they could get to 48. So we'll have to see. But look, let's take a look at the... Dwight took another three. So back-to-back three-point attempts for Dwight in games. And he did miss it, so look. Yay. I have a few things down from this game. Doc Rivers had an interesting quote about Paul Millsap. He kind of compared him to Groundhog Day, because you get the same from him every night. And I think that's a decent comparison. I know Millsap didn't have a great game here, but I like that comparison. I like that description for Millsap, that, you know, Groundhog Day, you get the same from him every night. He's going to play defense, he's going to give it his all. I like that. So I like that. Let's get to some of the stats over the last five games. You're going to see how bad the Hawks have been, really, in a sense, when you look at the stats here. 2-3 record. They're averaging. So always to keep in mind with this, this is all over the last five games. I don't like stipulating that the whole damn time, but sometimes it's necessary because people forget. So these are just from the last five games. 2-3 record. 102.4 points per game. That ranks 24th in the league. On a field goal percentage of 45%, that ranks 20th. A 3-point percentage of 31.3%, that ranks 25th. Again, the Hawks have really not been a great 3-point shooting team for pretty much most of the season, but this last little while has kind of really, they've really dipped. Free throw percentage of 75.7, that's 21st in the league. 21.2 assists per game, that's 20th. That number's not good enough. If you're Mike Budenholzer and the coaching staff, that's not good enough. The ball has, again, I do believe it's personnel that kind of have caused the ball to kind of stick sometimes. Sometimes Hardaway's taking that shot when he should pass it. Sometimes his possession stopping with Dwight. Sometimes it's Dennis not moving the ball enough. It's plugging new personnel into the system. Sometimes Malcolm Delaney can do that as well. So that number has to go up if you're the Hawks. I think they were third in the league in assists last year. I think they're only like fifth or sixth. I actually haven't checked that, so don't quote me on that. 42.4 rebounds per game, that's 18th. 6.4 steals per game, that's 24th in the league. 5 blocks per game, that's tied for 10th. 14.4 turnovers per game, that's 17th in the league. That number is not bad, all things considered. The Hawks have not been a very good turnover team, and they had some bad turnover games this week and the last five games. So that number isn't too bad, all things considered. I want to check quickly. Yeah, they only had 9 turnovers against the Blazers. So look, they have had some very decent turnover games. That number isn't too awful. They've had an offensive rating of 102.8, that's 25th in the league. A defensive rating, which they're normally quite good at here, but not this week. 109 points allowed per 100 possessions, that's 25th in the league. A net rating of minus 6.2, it's 25th in the league. And a plus minus rating of minus 5, which is 23rd in the league. So you can see for pretty much every single stat, major stat, except blocks, which they're tied for 10th, I should have said they're tied for 10th. They're below league average over the last five games. They're in the bottom half every single time. So that kind of shows you how they've kind of not played well. And there's so much potential for them to play so much better because they're... Yeah, look, I could go on all day, but look, they are what they are, those stats, and we'll just leave it at that. I've said all I've had to say about them. Good Lord, this thing's run for 51 minutes. We've got to finish this shit. Decent week here for Tim Hardaway Jr., 18.4 points per game and 45% shooting from the field, 35.5% from three. Okay week for Dennis here, 20 points per game, points per game, 45.8% shooting from the field, 5.8 assists per game, but 3.2 turnovers isn't ideal. He had some, from what I saw in the condensed highlights against the Clippers, he had some rough turnovers as well. Millsap, you know, he'll do his thing, 18 points per game. But then there's a huge drop off from, so those are the top three scorers from throughout the last five games. Then the next closest is Dwight on 11. So it just kind of, there's a big drop off there. People, other players haven't been stepping up recently as such as the Hawks need them to. Kind of Bazemore is fallen back to earth a little bit here. Over his last five games, he's averaging 8.8 points per game on 34% shooting from the field and 33% from three. So even though he has had a decent run of late, and I'm sure his stats from January 1st have been pretty decent, not the best five-game stretch here for Baze. I think he's only averaging 27 minutes a game as well in those last five games as well. So Baze has been better of late, but, you know, needs to pick up a little bit more and show a little bit more consistency, as he has done, to be fair, over this last month and a half. But look, you just gotta keep at it, and, you know, he will. He'll get back to it. That's almost going to do it, really. All-Star festivities, of course, start on Friday with the celebrity game. Yay. I will not be watching that. Of course, we got the great three-point shootout on Saturday. Your standard All-Star Saturday event, skills challenge, three-point dunk contest. Then, of course, you can watch Paul Millsap and co. go to work at the All-Star game on Sunday. That'll be interesting. I'm looking forward to seeing the Westbrook thing. I think there's bad blood there. I wonder if... I think it's Kerr. I wonder if Kerr will roll out the Westbrook, Durant, Curry, Thompson, Green. Just really start playing in Westbrook's head. That would be mean, but I would laugh to see that happen. And by the way, very quickly, I love Commissioner Adam Silver, but good Lord, Carmelo Anthony instead of as an injury replacement over Kevin Love, really? I would have given... Not only to a big, because the bench could do with a few more bigs, but I would have given the Celtics a second representative and given them, selected Al Horford as a replacement. But yeah, Carmelo, oh gosh. I was actually happy that Melo and Wade didn't make this game, but yeah. I love you, Adam Silver, but you dropped the ball on this one, I'm afraid. The Knicks suck. Like, Melo is a name. You know, he's not, you know what? We're not going to get into it. We're going to make people mad. But the Hawks are back in action next Friday at home, I believe, against the Miami Heat at Phillips Arena. The trade deadline is the 23rd of Feb, so the day before. Very interesting to see what happens. But look, that's going to do it. I don't think I have anything else to mention. There's we'll check our breaking news right quick. Just, you never know. You just never know. Oh, you can also watch Dominique as a dunk contest judge. So, you know, if you like seeing Dominique grade some dunks, you know, you can always give that a shot. No breaking news here as such, so look, enjoy the All-Star break, enjoy the All-Star festivities. If there's major Hawks deadline news, to be fair, the day after the deadline is a Friday, but if there's any major trades before then that the Hawks might jump on, we might hop on and do that, but look, that's going to do it. Good Lord, end it already. Thank you very much for listening. You can check out, I of course write on thehawksoup.com. You can check that out. I write some stuff occasionally. And shout out to all the Hawksoup crew as well. Do what you do, man, and enjoy, have fun.